Hey parents, welcome to today's episode with Seth. We dive a little further into why we go to fear when there is so much unknown. And I am so excited for you to listen to some of our examples of what our brains do when we tend to go into the uncertainty or to the unknown of the future and what we can do about it. I love to give you guys skills and tools. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Parenting Post-Wilderness, your guide to parenting struggling teens. I'm your host, Beth Hillman, a mom of five boys, including a post-wilderness teen and a life coach for parents. I will guide you on how to influence lasting change by first understanding the relationship-changing power of focusing on your own behavior instead of futile attempts to control your teens. Parents, the change begins with us. Hello, parents. Join with me in welcoming Seth with us today. Hello, Seth.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, so good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks. Okay, so we actually got a lot of responses from a podcast just a few weeks ago called Fear-Based Parenting and What to Do Instead. I actually changed the title on the email when I sent out the email to Fear-Based Parenting and How to Stop It. I didn't realize that. Yeah. Sometimes I'm just like, stop it. Can we all just please stop it?
Yeah.
But of course, I have a lot of empathy for parents.
If only it was that simple.
Exactly. Exactly. So something that is still on Seth and I's brains is this, to just kind of go along with that fear-based parenting is what the brain actually tends to do, which is to fill up uncertainty with negative ideas. So this all came about, well, just a little bit ago, is I was learning a bit about maps. This is, I'm going to go on a little tangent, so everybody hang on.
Say, are you going to be able to bring this back? No.
Just kidding. Well, that's why you're here, so.
Yeah, right.
So I was doing some research about maps in like the 1500s. So, you know, around when all the, not all, but a lot of the exploration into the Americas was being done, like Columbus and Captain Cook and those kind of explorers and discovery people. And they went off and there was many more than, of course, those two, but they went off and they discovered some of the places in the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But what they didn't know, on some of the maps, they would put the words terra incognita, which means unknown land. So some of the explorers were willing to say, I don't know what's here. Something is over there, but I don't know what it is.
The unknown. Haven't been there. Don't know.
Yes. Have no idea what's there. Yet some of the explorers, some of the cartographers of the time pretended they knew, and they would draw basically an imagined place or imagined land. Mm. And they would also fantasize about what lived on that land. So on some old maps, there are drawings of like polar bears the size of like Asia.
Mm. And well, I mean, I can recall, I mean, think about old sea maps, right? There would be krakens drawn in certain areas. There'd be sea dragons drawn in other areas, right?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. So what's so fascinating about, as far as I know, the maps that pretended that they knew what was there, all of it was scary. There were men, this, you know, as high as Texas walking on maps. There were men with horse hooves. This is like real history. They just in their imagination,
Sorry. When you say it's real history, I have to throw in a little caveat.
Yes, thank you.
of it's not real history, but it was perceived as accurate.
It was depicted history.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Good clarification. Yeah. Keep me on track.
All right. Okay. Well, I just don't want people thinking that we believe in this history, right?
Thank you. Yes, that was a very good clarification, very needed. So yes, absolutely. Yes, okay. I just meant there's truth that there's maps depicting.
Yes, got it.
Yes. Great. So what's interesting is the depictions, all of the depictions were scary. They were fear-based. They were, like you were saying, krakens and dragons with nasty claws and fire and, you know, polar bears that were going to eat us. And none of it was imagined as, you know, fields of daisies and sunshine. Mm. And I think that's so interesting because what we know and what we've learned is that humans have a negative bias. So,
Okay.
You want to clarify that?
And I fully agree with that, but I think it's important to understand why we have that negative bias.
Oh, very, very true. Would you like to go into that?
Sure. I think that the negative bias is a form of protection.
Yes.
It's a form of safety or putting up a barrier to keep us safe. If we don't know about that, it could be positive. It could be negative. Or it could be a neutral thing. But if there is an element of fear that you have to overcome to be able to go explore, right?
Yes.
And it's through that overcoming that fear that we actually get the answers that our brain is seeking, but also projecting, I don't know if I have the right word for it, but projecting these negative
future.
Yeah.
Fondling?
or the negative connotation or negative preconception of what is going to exist on the other side of that fear. That's what I'm trying to say. So it's keeping us safe. It's keeping us protected.
I love it. Exactly. It is very important, right, that according to our protective brains, that that we're our number one. So it's always looking out for us. Now there's a whole bunch of different caveats of that, but I'm not going to go into it. So,
it's also like, I know these surroundings, I know how to navigate them. I know what's in, I know what is in my immediate purview, so to say. So I know how to navigate this, or maybe we don't know how to navigate it, but we're at least familiar with it.
Yeah, exactly. So our survival brain is mostly just trying to protect us, and if it's there to seek out danger so that we can protect ourselves, exactly what you're saying. So
yeah.
So it's so interesting though that you know, these cartographers would basically have all these negative depictions about the unknown, and I think that is so much like my brain and other brains.
It's all
the other brains.
Yeah. Can I give a non-relational example that I am currently experiencing?
Ooh, yes.
Okay. So keep in mind, this is non-relational, but it's still, I think it's a good example of how our brains create to keep us safe. So I am currently in the home buying process. And within the home buying process, you don't have communication with the seller as many of you are familiar and everything else. And so everything is through multiple channels of communication. Well, when you don't have direct communication in regards to what is going to be done, what isn't going to be done, if we are going to come to agreement, not come to agreement, my brain goes, oh, these people don't want to sell to us. Oh, they don't. Yep. They're over this property. They don't want to do any more work to it. They just want to get out of it. And they're going to find somebody who is willing to take on these extra expenses. And it's not going to work out into our favor. Yeah. Right?
Yes. Right? Yes. Like many of us have been there. Yes.
Yeah. So my brain is going through all this doubt. Well, all that doubt is protecting me from being emotionally invested into this property. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. At least that's the way that I'm perceiving it. And so what my brain is doing is creating these situations that are completely unknown. And when you are waiting for information, that's when my brain goes into this negative. And like, I'm hopeful, but I don't really want to be hopeful. So it's probably going to turn out this way. I need to come up with alternative plans so that I can continue to move forward, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reality is there's nothing for me to truly think about until I get the information that I need.
Ugh. Yep.
And until I actually have all that information, then I have the power and the ability to make a decision.
Ah, yes.
But until I have the information, there's really nothing for me to do. And that sucks. I mean, it does. That really sucks. Is. Yeah. It sucks not having the information, especially when you want the information. Now, if we correlate this to a relationship, think about how many times you really want that information, but until you get that information, your brain is operating in this unknown space. And within that unknown space, it's going to, well, I need to do X, Y, and Z in order to protect. And that might be protect yourself. It might be protect your child, right?
Yeah.
But
indeed,
it's the same process.
Mm. Yeah, it is the same process. It's so fascinating that sometimes we are just lacking information. And the best thing to do, the hardest thing and the best thing to do is just wait. And then how do you become, I guess, aware of how your specific brain like freaks out in uncertainty?
Oh, it's pretty easy because it's just going into a negative thought pattern and cycle.
Oh, right. Like you just kind of explain like what you thought those people were thinking, that sellers.
Yeah.
They don't want to sell to me. They don't even like us. That it's like they were against you in some way.
Yeah.
Fascinating,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I go into this, and for me, yeah, when I don't have that information, I go into this totally negative thought pattern and cycle. Now think about this in regards to that negative thought pattern and cycle and where it starts to develop. Well, it develops way before this, but I'm going to give an example of what most teenagers or young adults experience, and something that I experienced even amongst my peers. Like, how many times did I go to school and so-and-so, one of my good friends, like, didn't acknowledge me or was in a rush in a hallway and like rushed past me. And I create a narrative in my brain that this person's upset with me. I did something wrong. This person no longer likes me. All of these things.
Yeah. And you see him in the hallway and you're like, see, they're talking about me.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Cause that's where our brain goes. And all of a sudden, but where does that come from? Fear.
Yeah.
It comes from fear, and fear holds us back in so many ways, which is why I think this is a great, like, kind of segue from fear-based parenting. But how many times did that other person's interaction when I was a teenager in high school and junior high have absolutely nothing to do with me? And I found out after the fact that I created a big scenario out of nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe they got into an argument with their parents. Maybe, might be relative. Maybe they were really stressed out because they had a test the next period that they didn't feel prepared for, or were worried about what they were prepared. Maybe they didn't even see me, right? Yeah.
Maybe they got their own bad news of some sort and were super in their head.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But I don't know any of that until I have the conversation, until I gather the information that is relevant to that scenario.
Yep.
To that experience.
Exactly. And you know, you just, something that you said caught my ear is you said out of nothing, but it wasn't really out of nothing.
Oh, fair.
You know, it was a friend walked by you and said nothing. So if you can go back to the fact of the situation,
right,
then it's like, oh, I didn't just, And I say those kinds of things all the time. I just came out of nowhere, right. You know, and it's like, well, no.
It did come from somewhere. Right. No, thank you for that clarification. I agree 100%.
Yeah. And then you've got this fact that you're dealing with, like we all are dealing with facts from day to day to day. Mm-hmm. You know, our kiddo said that to us, or they did or didn't do this or that, or they're smoking that or not, whatever it is. We have some kind of fact that we're dealing with. And then our interpretation or our bias kicks in, our justifications fear, all of it kicks in. And all of a sudden we're off and running on this fantasy.
Right.
Fantasy land of polar bears and as big as Texas.
Yeah. And how many times does a behavior resemble something? Like if your child is working on something or through something or trying to engage in positive behaviors and not engage in some of the negative, and I don't want to use the word negative, but behaviors that maybe aren't as healthy. Affect is similar or disposition is similar to something you've experienced in the past, it's really easy to think and jump to a conclusion that X, Y, or Z is transpiring again.
Yep.
Is happening in their lives again. But it's also just as likely, like when you are beginning to make healthier choices. Sometimes it's you're learning how to establish healthy boundaries amongst your peers. You're learning how to set aside healthy, productive time for yourself in order to take accountability and responsibility, to be able to enjoy the freedoms. And all of that is also challenging to navigate as you are beginning to navigate it. So
right. Hardly ever just stop one behavior and all of a sudden just start a new healthy behavior.
Not so much. Not so much.
Totally.
So, you know, as a parent, you might be going, oh my goodness, this is happening again. I know that it's happening again. Well, you don't actually. Mm-hmm. Because these behaviors, these affects, the overall disposition can look very similar, but there could be something completely different actually happening and transpiring.
Yeah. Yeah. So good. So good. I think what's so hard is trying to figure out one, it's that we have to have self-awareness, right? Before we can make any changes.
You have to recognize where your brain is going and why.
Yeah. So I think it's so helpful for people to understand, like, brains are going to do this. Your brain is going to jump on that highway of, see, there my kid goes again, mouthing off to me or disrespecting me or ignoring me or pulling away from me or whatever it is that story is, right? All the fear, or they're going nowhere. All of those stories is recognizing when your brain starts to fill in what you don't know.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah. And that's what you, having worked with you, have very proficiently labeled as those are the stories.
Yes. Yes. That is what I call them. Exactly. This totally reminds me as well of, I think I may have mentioned it on the podcast, so just bear with me, but when our third son burned his hand in Dominican Republic, he dripped hot melted tar on his arm.
Ouch.
Like, have I told this story? Seth,
you'd
probably be the best one.
No, this is new to me.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So he's over in a foreign country. He's 19 and it was an accident. And so, I'll spare you the details, but he's trying to put out a fire on a tar roof. And people are going to be like, wait, what happened now? Right. Anyway, and he's trying to put out the fire and he's trying to put it out with a towel, and he accidentally, the towel whips back and basically showers his arm in melted tar. Mm. Okay. Mm. So I'm trying to think, how much can I get away with not telling you? But anyway, he goes downstairs. They put his arm in a bucket of ice. They crack an egg on his arm, by the way, and they opened up a can of tomato sauce.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's how far we've come in our Western societies. We don't crack eggs on melted tar anymore. But either way, I think they thought it was going to help or somehow. But anyway, this is only a few years ago, people. So anyway, they finally stick his arm in ice because he's beyond, like, he can't stand the pain anymore, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So they finally get him to a hospital. They refuse to take him because he's too serious. And then he's made to drive 2 hours more to this to a hospital that is in a bigger city. And we don't know any of this at the time. And so I'm asleep in my bed, clear across in America, having, you know, just going to sleep because I have no situation yet to my knowledge. Right. So we get a call very early in the morning. You know, your son is in the hospital. He has melted tar on his arm. And of course, I just completely flip out. And I'm like, you know, and they're like, well, we're going to keep him here. The doctors know what they're doing, da, 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 da. And then we just hung up.
Oh, geez.
And talk about unknown land. Like, I don't know, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse. I don't know anything about, who knows anything about melted tar here? No one. I don't know what that entails. I don't know how much of his arm was exposed to the tar. I don't know anything. And so, of course, you know, the husband and I are freaking out and we are so worried and he's so far away. And our brains just went completely haywire. He's going to lose his arm. He will never be able to ski again, write again, live again, brush his teeth again. I mean, it just went haywire.
Yeah.
And so, you know, of course, as we gather information, we find out, yes, they indeed are sending him home too. Thank goodness. Needless to say, they wrapped his arm and folded it. So they folded his hand in a fist and then wrapped his entire arm up. Oh, it was like wrong move after wrong move. So, and then I'm getting very few bits and pieces of information. Then I hear he's in a wheelchair. I'm like, oh my gosh. Why would a burned arm land you in a wheelchair? I don't know that. And it was excruciating as a parent to try to, you know, deal with the crisis of the situation and not have hardly any information. And they were doing the best they could, the company that he was with or whatever. So he's 3 days out because of the airlines. You just could not get him home fast enough.
Right.
And so, and I'm in the middle of a training. I'm in the middle of the Arbinger training.
Oh no.
So I am supposed to be spending 8 hours a day paying attention to this training. Wingate, which is the wilderness company, sent me there to get trained. So it was on their dime. So I felt extra responsible to stay there. And I was basically dying inside is how I felt because I had zero information about this kid. And so I talked to my coach at the time. And what you said earlier actually reminded me of this situation is I had limited information. Very, very limited information. And I would have to wait and sit on my hands, as they say, till I could find out more information as they knew it. And so my coach said, and he was actually quite stern with me, he's like, you have to become aware and then acknowledge what your brain is doing, and then you have to stop it. I was like, what are you talking about? It was like he asked me to, you know, build a brick building, you know, with my own two hands. It was just like, I've never done that. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, you can do it. You have way more control than you ever thought possible to your own brain. And he just convinced me that this is, and he was right, this is what I had to do. I had to tell my brain it didn't know yet that the information was coming. Period, the end.
Yeah.
And so, and he said, your brain is going to drift, right? That's normal brain behavior. It's going to drift into fear. It's going to do that. So don't beat yourself up when you realize you've drifted into fear again. He's like, but as soon as you're aware, you pull it back and you say, actually, what's true is, and then you state what you know. And I mean what you know. Like, okay, the person on the phone just said, you should find a burn unit. I'm like, okay, that's the fact. The fact is the latest news I knew was I'm supposed to find a burn unit.
Yeah.
And so my coach was like, then that is your task. You find the burn unit. That's it.
Right.
And when you
right.
find your mind drifting into fear, you just say, no thanks, brain. And then you go back to the task at hand, or you go back to the last thing you knew was a fact. Like in your situation, you're like, okay, the last thing I knew was I walked by my friend and he didn't say hi.
Yeah.
And so you go back to the fact. So as I got information, I would go back to the fact and then I would deal with the fact. And I'd be like, okay, I guess I have to find a burn unit. And then I realized I don't know how much of him is burned. And right. so then I was able to ask an intelligent question. Hey, how much of him is burned? They right. were like, from his shoulder to his hand, to his fingers. I'm like, okay. So then I called a doctor friend. I'm like, so then I started to like be able to actually sort some things out. I'm going to call a doctor friend and see if they have anything to tell me. And that doctor friend said, you've got to get pictures as soon as possible. I'm like, oh, pictures. Good idea. I hadn't even crossed my mind. So then I'm reaching out to the people. I need pictures and I need them fast. And then they were able to do a task. So then I got the pictures and between all my bawling, which of course was appropriate, I was able to send those pictures into Salt Lake City, who has one of the best burn units, University of Utah. Luckily, we were here and we were able to send them in. And then we were able to get more information about when we should bring him in, you know, and get an appointment and just the whole thing. By the time my son actually walked off that plane, by the way, he was not in a wheelchair for Pete's sake, people. By the time he walked off, we knew at least what was going to happen for the next 24 hours. Sure. And it was set. And I was flabbergasted at the amount of control I demanded from my brain. I demanded that it just set about trying to find the best burn unit. Demanded, then all of a sudden I was like, nope, now we're getting pictures. And then I went to the Arbinger facilitation training. So my coach was like, you go and you sit and you listen. And every time you feel your mind drifting, you bring it back and you remind yourself, there is nothing I can do now, which I couldn't. My task here is to get trained. And then I would get trained. And then at lunch, I would go in the bathroom, completely fall apart, let myself have that. Mm-hmm. And then I would go about the task of getting pictures or finding the burn unit or calling the burn unit or all this stuff. It was fascinating to me how much I was able to direct myself with just the knowledge that I could. Does that make sense? Anyway, that was a long story.
No, absolutely. But I mean, in the way that it makes sense for me is it's also important to break down how much information you have, the task at hand that are relevant to the information, the actual facts that are present, and then going to the next step. Because I think that's another place where we sometimes jump ahead is we have X amount of information, but then we automatically jump to Z. But yet there's a whole period or piece of like after X, there's things to do, communication to have, conversation to have, et cetera, et cetera. And then you move to the information that's presented and why. But oftentimes it's very easy to jump and skip a couple of steps of task information.
Yes. Thank you so much for bringing that out. Exactly. Oh my heavens. That just like raised my heart rate like 30% remembering that little crisis. I want to let everybody know that he is fine, by the way. I just need to let everybody know, speaking of parents listening to this. America the Beautiful, I will say that 1,000 times. They unwrapped his arm immediately. They were like, okay, if you would have kept his arm wrapped for even a week, he would have been completely, you know, like, the word isn't paralyzed, but he would have been stuck in that position, right?
Right.
His hands folded in on themselves. But luckily they got him back. They were able to stretch his hand out. They were able to scrape the tar off. Oh my gosh. And then do everything they needed to. And lo and behold, he has full use of his hand. Full use. In fact, you can hardly see the scars. That it's a miracle, I just have to say.
No, it's amazing.
It's amazing. So I learned so much from that situation of understanding how much control I actually had for my brain. I was able to concentrate on the training. I was able to get through it. I was able to get the certification, which is, you know, been the basis of a lot of the basis of my coaching. And then I was also able to be there for my son
and attend to him
and attend him and do all this stuff. It was like I was superhuman or something. It was crazy cool. So that is what all of us, I'm not a unicorn, right? I'm just a person. All of us have access to that. If we can actually realize,
recognize,
yeah, and recognize how much control we actually have and how much most of the time, including me, we are just letting our brains decide for us, right?
Sure. And sometimes deciding what the outcome is going to be for us.
Yeah. We just know those polar bears the size of Texas. That's what we're going to, that's, we just know that's what's happening on that land. That's it. Mm-hmm. We don't even consider second guessing that or challenging that.
Like, and I think, a good way to like reframe and kind of bring this all back is think about the explorers that actually did go to these lands of where they thought there were polar bears or California was an island or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, to the people who were back home, if this person all of a sudden didn't come back for X amount of time, the, all of a sudden the story in their head could be, oh, they've been eaten by one of those polar bears.
Oh my gosh, right?
But the reality could be, oh, well, this person just found this amazing, beautiful land that is very fertile. Crops are growing great. There's plenty of wood. And they decided to stay because it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Two very different outcomes.
Yeah. Extremely different outcomes. Fascinating.
And one is based on information and one is based on story.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
So in summary, I think what I would like to just kind of remind everybody is to start paying attention to where their brain is going. And if those thoughts are substantiated, if you can actually back them up, if they're actually factual or if they're simply stories. And then if they are stories, what do you need to do to gather the information that is necessary for the situation?
Exactly. Exactly. It's so important to recognize that self-awareness piece is key, everybody. It is key. And that's the first step. I just always want to leave, you know, our audience with, what do I do now? It's like the first step is self-awareness, which is amazing. Yeah. And then you can start doing the separation, like you said. It's such a good, it's a practice. I want to offer that too. It is a practice to start noticing, oh, that's actually the fact and the rest of it is all story.
Yeah.
Awesome, Seth. Thank you so much for being with me here today. And
my pleasure.
Love your insight.
Yeah. Appreciate the time and the consideration. And hope you and everybody listening on whatever day it might be, have a lovely rest of the day.
Aw, that's a great send off. All right. See you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey there. Thank you for joining me today. If you know a struggling parent, please share this with them. If you have any questions or want to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at Beth Hillman Coaching or through my website, BethHillmanCoaching.com. And remember, parents, the change begins with us.